Hello and welcome back to a new episode of the Multidimensional Evolution Podcast. My name is Kim McCall. I'm an anthropologist and consciousness researcher, and for this podcast, I like to have conversations with people who explore different elements of our reality as multidimensional beings on a journey of evolution. Given that there are all manner of ideas on these things out there, I always like to emphasize the disbelief principle. Don't believe in anything, including the things you hear on this show. Experiment, have your own experiences, and make up your own mind. Today, I am speaking with two engaging and insightful medical professionals from Brazil, the sisters Fernanda and Mariana Schweitzer. We talk about their book, Self-Care, A Dynamic Approach to Integral Health. Fernanda is a physician specialized in occupational medicine. Mariana is a nurse and university lecturer with a PhD in science and postdoctorate from the School of Nursing at the University of Sao Paulo. Like me, Fernanda and Mariana's approach to understanding consciousness and human life is strongly guided by the paradigm and methodologies of conscienciology, a consciousness research discipline that was developed in Brazil by Dr. Valdiviera. The focus of this conversation, as the title suggests, is self-care for integral health. Anybody who has dealt with health issues knows that health is a fundamental pillar of being able to live a joyful and productive life. If we want to complete our life mission, it helps us to be in good health. So in this conversation, I explore some of the key aspects of the integral health model that Fernanda and Mariana have developed, and that includes many practical ideas we can all put into practice. We also discuss some broad picture questions about the tension between personal health needs and universal systems, and how physical and non-physical factors come together in health. If you find this topic interesting and would like a chance to go more in depth and connect with Fernanda and Mariana, you can join our book club in which we are reading their book. We meet once every month until June 2024, and you are welcome to join at any time. The easiest way to do so is the WhatsApp group of the club using the link in the show notes. The other announcement I have is for an exciting event that we're currently organizing in Australia, the first Australasian Pacific Conference on Paraurbanology and Serenology, that will be held from 18 to 20 October 2024 at the Adelaide Convention Centre. If you want to understand some of the global changes in consciousness that are currently happening, find ways in which to support them with greater serenity, and meet consciousness explorers from around the world, this event will be for you. You can find more information at a link in the show notes. But for now, here is my conversation with Fernanda and Mariana. So Fernanda and Mariana, welcome so much to the podcast to talk about your excellent book, Self-Care. To start off with, I always like to get people to tell us a little bit about your background. In your case, let's just start off with where are you, both of you? Because you're in two different places, I believe, yeah?
Yeah, we are both in Brazil. But I'm in the south, in Foz do Iguaçu, near Paraguay, near Argentina. And Mary?
Yes, thank you so much for having us. Yes, and I'm currently in São Paulo City, in the state of São Paulo. It's a little in the southeast region of Brazil.
Yeah, okay. So that's very different kind of spaces. And Fernanda, like Sao Paulo, when I was living in Brazil, I was in Rio de Janeiro for a year, and people always kind of made me afraid of Sao Paulo, telling me how big it was, how polluted it was, how sort of overwhelming. So
yes, it's still the same.
Yeah,
crazy traffic makes you very think about going to the countryside, because it's a lot of urban and, you know, gray sky, gray everything. But it's really good to work.
Right. You have good opportunities there as far as your work goes. And where do you work, Mariana?
I am currently a professor at Universidade Federal de São Paulo. It's our federal university. I work at the School of Medicine in the Department of Preventive Medicine. So that's where I also have a research group and extension program related to promotion of health and complementary therapies in general. So I've been there since 2016 already.
Yeah, okay. And what about you, Fernanda? In Iguazu Falls, you're at the campus for the Center for Higher Studies of Conscienceology. Is that where you live?
Yes. It's really, I live in Discernimentum. It's another campus connected with the High Studies of Conscienceology, CIEC. It's very, they are connected inside, but are different institutions. And so I live inside. I'm a researcher that lives inside the campus, and also, my profession, I'm a physician, so I work in Itaipu. It's a huge hydroelectric power plant here in Iguazu Falls. And so I'm in both spaces all the time.
Yeah, because for people who don't know, Iguazu Falls is defined by these huge waterfalls, which are kind of the South American equivalent to the Niagara Falls. And Itaipu is a hydroelectric power plant, right, which is another defining feature of the region that uses the same river that has the waterfalls to generate the power. How, because obviously you're in the campus, Mariana, you live in Sao Paulo, but I know you're also a study and a researcher of conscienceology. And I guess my first question around that is, how did that come into your life? What drew you to this study of consciousness through the experimental way that conscienceology suggests?
Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry if you're hearing some rain here. It just started we're good. And actually, it's Fernanda's fault. I'm going to be very clear. If you don't know, me and Fernanda, we are sisters. And we are from a small island in the south of Brazil. It's called Florianópolis. And we grew up there. It's by the beach. And we were in the school together. We did the same high school. And during high school, Fernanda got in contact with conscienceology. And then she started studying and exploring. And I'm younger, 3 years old, younger. And then when I was, growing up, I was starting to have contact with the ideas and the neologisms and everything related to conscienceology. Fernanda would go for the studies in the campus and I would get in contact with everything. So when I got a little older, then I started to do some of the introduction courses of conscienceology. And then I'm still part of it, yes.
And so you followed your bigger sister, Fernanda. How did you get drawn into it?
Oh, when I was younger, I had some small phenomena, some small experiences. And we are from a Catholic family. And I was part of a Catholic young group that goes and it talks about religion and pray in the communities. So this was a really important part of my life to comprehend myself and to help people. But sometimes in this process, I had some experience that were a little different from what people told me it should be. Sometimes I had some inspiration, some ideas, some. I feel the need to say something to somebody in that process to help. And these aren't my ideas. This came from someplace else. And also with that, I felt a little bit of the energies that we studied, the bioenergies. And in all these experiences, once I had a friend that invited me to go to a speech, to an activity of Conscienceology. And when I went in this activity, the ideas were very natural to me, very organic. It makes a lot of sense the way the experiences I have had until that time, till that moment, the way they explained this was really natural to me, more than even my own religion that I grew up and lived all my life. So I began to study more, to make some courses, to go to some immersions in high studies of Conscienceology here in Iguazu Falls. And in this way, it got all the time, it got more clear the way it connects to my life. And then I'm here since then. I decided with my husband to come to Foz do Iguaçu, to Iguaçu Falls, to live here, to stay more, even more connected with all the research campus.
Mm. And I'm curious in that story, because when you talk about intuition, I imagine that people within the Catholic paradigm might say that you were inspired by Jesus or by the Holy Spirit or something like that. Did you have those?
Yeah.
Like, why were those explanations not satisfactory to you? Why?
Yeah, that's a good question, because that was the turning point to me. The Holy Spirit wasn't one entity, but I felt these intuitions have different patterns, like it came from different people. It mm-hmm. couldn't be all the same
source.
Thank you. So it couldn't be the same source. And then I began to refine my feeling, my energetic approach to comprehend where it came from. And then it helped me to get more experiences in this non-physical dimensions.
And was it difficult? I'm assuming you were Catholic because your family was Catholic. Yes. Was it difficult for you to make the change, to go, sorry, this doesn't really work for me anymore, I'm really drawn to this and being Conscienceology?
It was a little, because I was a very intense young girl with a lot of convictions. And my mom was a little bit worried because it could be something that wasn't really serious, or some institution that was trying to manipulate.
Maybe. Yes.
Yes, like a cult. So for some time, we couldn't find out a way to talk about it properly. But then she felt it make me it was good to me. She felt it wasn't really it didn't change my values of trying to help, trying to be a better person. And then I think she got it.
Mm. And so, Mariana, did you benefit from the trailblazing sister? Then it was easier for you to follow in her wake.
Yes, very much. Thank you, Fernanda, for everything, because she was the older one and she passed for some situations that I did not have to, because it was easier for me to explain that I would do a course or that I would start volunteering, and together we study some aspects. And we also study other materials too. For example, when I was my background is as nursing. And then when I was in the middle of my nursing college, I wondered that should have more aspects of healthcare that aren't only after someone got sick. So I started studying traditional Chinese medicine in the south of Brazil. We had like, I don't know, five people who do that. It was not very popular at the time. But then it became very popular over time, and our family, we started using, and I start to connect all these informations about energy and healing and how we could do different approaches of healthcare. And another thing that really helped both me and Fernandes, because our family is very open-minded, and the city is out of Brazil, because we have so many cultures and so many different approaches of healthcare, that people are very open-minded towards different ideas and different ways of taking care of yourself. So I think this approach really helped us to start to consider including, you know, taking care of your energy, taking care of your mental health, taking care of your health, like your body health, especially because we were, you know, near the ocean and people do lots of sports. So we had the opportunity to bring all these ideas together, especially because we did university at the same time. She was doing physician course and I was doing nursing in the same university, in the same hospital. And we'll be discussing together everything that we're, you know, receiving during classes and everything, and together with the volunteer work and the other studies that we have been doing. So I think we support each other a lot. That was very helpful. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a lovely team, a teamwork. And it sounds like you both from a really young age knew that you wanted to work in the health sector, as well as being drawn to these multidimensional frameworks.
Yes, indeed. We have a father that he has a health condition that demands care. So I believe the way our family treated him, and then the way we, from a young age, had to be very aware if he would have, you know, needing some care. And then I think it just grew on us the importance of taking care of people and maybe following this way of work. I believe mostly that was the reason. And for me, different from Fernanda, I had the opportunity when I was 15 years old to go and do some high school in the U.S., I went to Iowa City in the state of Iowa. It was really countryside, a lot of cornfields. And then it was really good experience for me. And I stayed with a family. That the family, she was a nurse. And then I got contact with the nursing, you know, role, and then the nursing work in the hospital. And that really helped me. And the bonus of this is because our mother, she's also from the health area. She's a physical educator. Yes. And she always talked to us about it. She was a professor in high school. And then we had contact with the importance of taking care, eating well, doing sports, sleeping a lot. It was very important for us. These values were passed from her. And at the end, I'm a professor just like her, because I think all this influence was really important for me. And then it influenced both of us, of course.
Yeah. Sounds like you planned well for your arrival in this dimension.
True.
So turning to your book, the subtitles, so it's Self-Care, A Dynamic Approach to Integral Health. And I thought it would be nice to start with defining two key terms in there, self-care and integral health.
Yes, absolutely. Self-care can represent a lot of things for many people, but the concept we chose was related to self-care as an action to empower yourself, an action to be able to age well and have a long life. So for us, self-care is related to the actions that you do to live well and live longer. So everything that you do related to that. I don't know if Fernanda would add something else. Or...
Sure, because the idea of self-care also, we have a formal definition from WHO, W-H-O,
mm-hmm.
World Health Organization, that is about having the ability to take care of yourself, to prevent diseases, promote health, and deal with your own diseases alone or in a community with or without a professional, a health professional. So the perspective of healthcare is about empowerment, as Mariana said. You are the center of the management of your own health. If you need help to do that or not, if you want to share this with your friends and family or not, the way you want to do it, it's okay. You can try it in different perspectives, but you are the center of the process and you command it. You give the directions. So it's really the really different from what we sometimes feel people doing, that I give the decision to a physician, to a practitioner, to a professional. And this is a change of mindset.
Yeah, so then the professionals become kind of a resource that we use, right, as the person looking after their health.
Yes, absolutely. And the idea of integral health, it's when you can bring together not only the conventional approach of health, that's, we can call it like biomedicine, or, you know, the health that usually it's like in the university where people get their diploma, but also complementary approaches that includes many opportunities of traditional and integrative and complementary medicines that have been used for a long time. But when we think about integral health, we think about the evidence-based complementary therapies. So everything that you have from a complementary approach and a traditional medicine, but it is now today possible to, you know, see the evidence of its use and why should you use it and how you should use it. For example, many studies about meditation have shown many evidence in the last 30 years, something that like before we did not have it. So this is one example of one complementary therapy that we can include in this. But I think the great difference of integrative health or integral health is this invitation for action, for knowledge about your own health, and then, you know, not only to give to another person the way to be, you know, living well, but to for the patient, for the person to be able to take part on this area and then think about its own health and the actions that would make it better for them. So I think this emphasis on the person, it's very interesting from the integrative approach. What do you think, Fernanda?
Yeah, and if you think about integral, it's about having all together. So sometimes people don't connect their life purposes with health, their desires with health, their own frustrations with health. But if we are just one, and now more than ever, we see the connections between mind and body and happiness and all the problems of mental health we're having, we must make this more integral, more connective.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely come back to that, because it raises questions about health issues as indicators of other aspects in our life journey, right? That I think are really important to talk about. But before we go there, you mention in your book, you talk about different health paradigms. And could you just summarize some of the key health paradigms that you discuss and that are relevant in our lives?
Yes, one approach that we also want to explore in the book is to open people to different paradigms and approaches and views of understanding the world. And usually, when we think about health, we only If we are in a conventional approach, we think about health when health is related to, you know, the beginning of science, but a lot of things have done before it. When you think about old times, and especially the old age with traditional Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic medicine or Unani medicine, those, especially from Asia, we have many information until now, but also from indigenous communities. They do have indigenous traditional knowledge and medicine that we are still using today. So when we open up these, you know, possibilities of understanding what is health, what is a disease, we understand that usually in the conventional way, the disease is always a bad thing, and then health is a good thing and you're doing something good. But then when we overlap and then we see beyond this conventional approach and we see, for example, traditional Chinese medicine, health and disease, it's like a movement. You know, you will be healthy and you'll be sick sometime of your life. This is part of living. You will get some kind of disease. And if you're not having some kind of disease in like 30 years, be aware that, you know, something's going to need your attention in the future. And of course, we complete with the consensuality paradigm, where we understand that diseases and health, these all have a meaning in your life, and you can overlook into this as a possibility to live better and, you know, fulfill your desire in this life, as Fernando was just saying. Do you want to? Yeah.
And this is, these different paradigms are important too, because sometimes they give sense to some things that we don't understand in the biomedical paradigm. For example, sometimes people say, oh, I think it's going to rain because my knee or my elbow or my shoulder is hurting today. And in our biomedical paradigm, it doesn't make any sense. Oh, come on. How does this ideas could be related? But if we look at, for example, the Chinese paradigm, we can understand the climate, the rain, the sensibility to humidity. Yes, this sensibility to humidity, it is connected to our energetic meridians. So people can feel differently their body because the climate is different. It's very normal indeed. And in other paradigms, for example, Indian, we also can have changes in our structure of the body. And this can be showed in your face, in your tongue, in your structure. And this helps the person and the professionals to be more accurate in their diagnosis.
Yeah, that's an interesting example with the, because I guess everybody will have heard of this, people saying, oh, my knee hurts, my arthritis is sore, we're going to get rain. And even if we can maybe rationalize it and say, oh, the atmospheric pressure is different or the humidity is different, we still lack exactly the explanatory model unless we go to something like in Chinese medicine, I guess the energy flows in the body or something like that. So that's a good explanation around the different paradigms.
We usually exclude what we don't understand instead of looking for a different explanation for that. And this is the integral health. Are there any explanation I could consider? And if there is, maybe my body could be more comprehended with this paradigm than with the one I have. So it's a tool, it's a resource.
You have a nice quote, sentence that jumped out at me, which is, science is better at recognizing human patterns than at explaining exceptions. And that for me sums up a lot of the biomedical kind of paradigm, I suppose, that we can look at large scale patterns. We can look at why certain populations, for example, smoking causes has a high, increases the risk of lung cancer and all these other kind of conditions. And then there's always, you can always point to somebody who is 95 years old and has smoked all their life, and there they are going strong, right? Like this kind of exceptional, and that's an extreme example, but there are many examples around that. And it seems to me that well, you've used Chinese medicine a couple of times, like that is probably closest to like multidimensional energetic and other factors that get taken into consideration, right? That do you find those other paradigms sometimes have ways of explaining those exceptions?
Yes. Especially when you think about Chinese medicine that we both study a little deeper. But me and Fernando, we had the opportunity to go to India together to the launch of the WHO Global Center for Traditional Medicine. There's this project since 2 years ago that they are building this big global center for traditional medicine in Jamnagar. And over there, they have this big event where they build and bring many people from different paradigms. And especially Ayurvedic medicine, it explains a lot things related to your diet. Like, you know, when people, you know, oh, I don't feel good when I eat, you know, too many of this food or this fruit. And people be like, you know, these oranges are good for everybody. But then you look at that body composition and how Ayurvedic medicine understands how that body works. And then they'll be like, yeah, maybe orange only this time of the day will be okay for you. Otherwise, you won't feel so good. Of course, this is just an example. No problem with orange, please, everybody. Continue to eat orange, but then you can start to understand why some people, you know, they get fat and some people are so slim and how their body work and what kind of diet would be better for them and why sometimes the best way to treat something is not through the logical approach, but through massage or dance or some kind of, you know, body-mind movement that would be helpful to treat trauma or even very severe depression and things like this. So in these cases that are the exceptions, we can see many possibilities and also good things that are good for everybody. You know, everybody benefits from yoga, meditation, relaxation, respiratory exercises. We have plenty of evidence for this. And usually we do not include these kind of recommendations for our patients in the biomedical paradigm. And it's so difficult. We have so much stress and burnout and stuff like this. Fernanda has followed many patients through her career, and then probably she has more examples of this.
Yes, because people, there's a sentence and a Chinese sentence too that says there are no diseases, they're just sick people, because each one is different. Each person with a disease is a different person. And sometimes we have to define some metrics to define what works and what doesn't. But it's just statistical. You are never sure as a physician that these are this medicine will really work for your patient. You must observe question and being in touch with your patients to that. And I believe we've lost this ability, this perspective sometimes in biomedical approach. And now we are making the opposite way to connect with the feelings and the desires and more subtle aspects of this, the patients.
Yeah, I'm really, as you're talking, I'm thinking about how the biomedical approach is, which I suppose we're using that as an expression for the healthcare system in Western Europeanized kind of nations, right, where it's based on sort of universal rules in a sense. Like you have this disease, you take this medication, you kind of present with often quite basic analysis, and then take this cream, take this pill. And I guess this model has developed because it has a certain success rate, right? It's not like it's, I mean, it is also a model that I guess we have to, it has changed and supported a change in life expectancy and overall better healthcare than we probably had 100 years ago. What do you think about that? So this is kind of what you're talking about now, is like maybe evolving that system to something that will take it to another level.
Oh, Mary, if you want to open up your mic.
Yes, no, sorry about that. The integral health concept was completely in this area because it started in the 70s, especially, when people were getting a lot of information about biomedical success and possibilities, but then they were forgetting about the people. And then now we are seeing a lot of person-centered care and how you connect all of this. And, you know, when we think about this evidence approach, we want the best of both worlds, let's say like this, because the patient will be the person that knows best about how he works and how his body works. And, well, he wakes up with himself and, you know, takes care of himself. But then the healthcare professionals, they will build together the better way to take care of this patient. And I teach physician, future medical physicians, and usually they are invited to, you know, I will say what's best for the other person. And that's what we've seen a big change over time. That no, we need to build together, we need to listen to the patient and build together the best care. And of course, we are not saying this when the person enters an ER and it has a broken leg or something, because then you need to, you know, use the best of biomedical approach. But then when you think about chronic disease, chronic pain, you know, things that people need to be aware and take care of for their entire life, then we need to be able to listen and to combine and make a good plan together. So I would go with that.
And so it sounds like you're seeing, would you say you're seeing a shift, at least in Brazil, in terms of the mainstream medical hospitals, GPs, being more open to cooperative working with people they see?
Yes.
I think this is something that it's growing. It's still not the biggest offer. Sometimes in our universal healthcare system, but it's already the perspective or the goal for everybody. And people are even in these resistant places are already admitting this perspective. So there was 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was with a group studying this centered health approach to the patient. And some colleagues were saying, "Oh, we didn't know how to do that 20 years ago. Oh, we are really tough. We need to change. It's not easy, but it's important." So we see this movement happening.
Yeah, that's
yes. For example, in São Paulo city, where I live, and then where I, you know, follow my students through healthcare services and primary healthcare facilities, we have a coverage of 100% of our 469 primary healthcare centers with complementary therapies. So I think in Brazil, it's a good example how we could be able to include the complementary therapies in the health system for free for everybody, and then promote this approach and people would be using, you know, auricular therapy in the healthcare unit when they go because they want to, you know, stop smoking. And they tried everything. And then they join a traditional Chinese medicine group where they receive these seeds in their ears. And we have very good results for that. And they are like, I thought, we had a patient, he started smoking when he was like 9 years old. And then in 6 years old, he was joining this group for the first time because he really wanted to stop, but he tried a lot of things before. And then he found himself in this group and then he quit it. And he was just so happy. And it was like, I thought this would never happen in my life. And it is everything, not only the practice, but how you give an idea of community and to share and to be able to find other people with the same issue and then, you know, build stronger communities together. I think this is very, this is something that is very interesting as a bonus of this movement. So,
yeah. And one of the big obstacles, it seems to me, to us being active agents in our own healthcare is lack of knowledge. Right, like I developed a few years ago osteoarthritis in my ankle, and that sent me on a journey of discovery and finding out about my own sort of body. And there was information about the benefit of blood tests and this kind of information that you can get that I had never been told by a physician. And then I went and saw a naturopath and got a whole new insight into the kind of information you can get. I was just listening to a podcast about the importance of brain scans and understanding the brain from a physical perspective to assist with mental health issues, whereas often we don't even go there, right? So these kinds of access to deeper knowledge, what sort of role do they play in your approach?
Thus, this perspective of knowledge and a vision, a cosmovision about health, a critical vision about health, is something people need to be empowered to construct. Because we say people, oh, you are okay, and if you don't, go to a physician. This is not a good idea of how managing your own needs.
And to only think about health when you're sick, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. And when you are, you just go somebody that we're going to tell you exactly what to do, as if it was going to work, and it's not true. And we have another problem that we have constructed this biomedical approach in with the physician, the center. In most of the countries in Brazil, we have had. And the physician is not a good example of how to take care of themselves. In Brazil, physicians live 10 years less than the general population. It's a lot because they work too much. They have too much responsibilities. They must be always right. So it's not a good idea. It's not a good combination. Give your decisions to somebody else and this person cannot take care of themselves. So this is the change. Not just about have the informations and look for the information you need by your own, but don't look just to the physician to look for information. And we have a lot of options now. We have TED Talks about health. We have a lot of videos, all the social media. And we have also a lot of good practitioners of different paradigms that could help you to understand yourself better.
Yeah, and don't just look when you're ill, right?
Yes. In the and of course, people can feel a little lost sometimes, but usually we have seen that the intuition of people are very good towards their health and how they should behave towards their self-care. And in the book, we present the triad of self-care, where we invite people to think about, you know, what are the resources I have about health? Okay, so I've been to, you know, if I have a headache, I've been to a neurosurgeon, I've been to the chiropractor, I've been to the physician, and then how they use this information with their vision, their cosmovision of why they do get headaches and why this happens when they are, you know, overloaded of work or stress or, you know, things are happening. And then beyond the resources and the cosmovision, there is the concept of health. What do they use health for? Why health is so important for them is to be able to take care of themselves, of their family, or to bring money to their life. Why is health important? So when you think of all these aspects, you can start to build this plan of, okay, so maybe if I go to a physician and he just gives me medicine, it will not happen. It will not help. It's not exactly what I want. I want to understand better why I have a headache. And sometimes the people would not want that. They'll be like, no, please just give me the medicine. And then sometimes they'll be, no, I want to look deeper. Okay, so now let's try. Okay, I didn't have time before, but now I have time. So it's okay if the person is not ready at the moment to look a little deeper. But then it's always important to take care of their health and to understand these resources and the possibilities and what you can do for that and about it. So I think this is the invitation we try to do in the book. We really like the concept of nudge, you know, like how you nudge people. Okay, so maybe, you know, I don't like to be ill, but then this happened. So now I need to take care of myself. Okay, maybe at the right moment, you're not going to be so happy, but we have a course about self-care here in Brazil with over 400 people. And usually after the period of the disease passed, people will bring their stories and they'll be like, you know, it was very important that I got to heal that time of my life. It changed my perspective, the way I treat people, the way I treated myself. Oh, it was awful when I got sick. But then when I see this now, it was the best thing that could happen in my life. You know, it's not me or Fernanda saying, it's the people that are participating with us and bringing their stories and things that they say that do not work. So I cannot only take medicines and do not do psychology treatment. Oh, I cannot think that I can resolve this all by myself. These are their saying about what not to do and then how they build their network and start to take care of themselves. So that's all good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Sure. And I love that focus on purpose, to think about the purpose of health, right? Because nobody wants to be sick because it doesn't feel nice. Life doesn't feel great when we're sick. But we don't necessarily think about it from the positive perspective as to why we want to be, the why of our well-being. And in that context, I guess I'd like to turn, because of course, you have a background in consensiology, which means you look at things from a multidimensional perspective, so that we were somewhere before we were born. We were born for a reason in a particular context. So can you talk a bit about that and how you see multidimensionality relate to our health and illness journey?
Sometimes it's hard to consider what we are going to propose here. But sometimes we plan this life and we include some insurances. And what does it mean? For us, as in consensiological paradigm, we plan this the next life to achieve some goals. And we can include some insurance if we are not in the best track. And this insurance can be some kind of disease. Because, for example, an hypertension or osteomuscular problem, because these are going to make us reconsider all our lives. Oh,
like a, wake-up call. Like people call it a wake-up call, right? It's like, hey, wake up to something,
Yes, that's the point. So sometimes we are really anger with the disease, but we have no idea. We ourselves have planned that in our own wake-up call plan. And even if we, it's not the case, because this body gets old and loses function, and naturally we are going to have chronic diseases in any moment. And but it helps us to reconsider the way we are taking care of ourselves and our own life. And sometimes when people have very critical diseases, they change their own life, make really profound changes to be more in connection with what they desire, what do they think it's the important way of living here. But these are, for example, two ideas. What do you think, Mary?
Yes, and this is very, very thoughtful of us to invite people to think. You know, you don't have to believe in anything we are saying this, but you can be invited to reflect that maybe the way that you're living has aspects that, you know, will influence your health and your disease, you know, prognostics and everything. But what we have seen is that sometimes when people do get ill, it's okay, you can feel everything, but then what you're gonna do with that? That's the big question. And if you're not taking care of yourself, that's something that you can always analyze and think about it. And what we are doing so far is starting to do these questions at younger age. So usually our groups of healthcare professionals, you know, they are in their 30s, 40s, 50s. And when we have colleagues or people that come to our courses and they are in their 70s, most of people are like, oh, this makes totally sense. So this is something that people will grow into it. So if they live long enough, they will be aware of their health. And, you know, they will know the price they pay if they drink too much or if they do not eat well. So this is a knowledge they will grow on themselves. But then when we start to teaching about self-care for, you know, teenagers, people in their 20s, they'll be like, I don't want to learn about this. This is something I want to do when I retire. I don't want to do this now. And then, of course, sometimes they'll be like, at the end of the course, they'll be like, you know what? If I knew about this before, or if I invited myself to think about my self-care before, I would not be having this problem now. I would be able to, you know, take care of my, you know, anxiety. We have many, my young students, they do deal with anxiety a lot and mental health issues. And then when we invite them to overthink about it, it's not in a way to punish themselves, to culpabilize them, but, you know, bring back their responsibility to be aware and what they are doing. Most of my students, they don't sleep a lot. They sleep like 3 hours a night. Okay, this will have a big price in your mental health. I need to tell you this now. And they'll be like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And then we start to break this cycle, especially in our area that is the healthcare professionals. We start to break this cycle. And then by the end of the course, they'll be like, yeah, maybe I will look into this. Maybe I'll make a little change. You don't have to do a big change. That's the invitation we do. When we propose our method of self-care, the find, embrace, move again method, we ask and invite people to find what they want to, you know, take care, look into it, and then beyond, you know, ending up and not having anxiety no more in their life, they'll be embracing it, understanding why they have it, when it appears, what is possible to do because of this, and then do the movements they need to do, you know, sleep better. This is super, super important. If you have anxiety, you need to sleep in the same time every night. If you don't sleep so many hours, but, you know, to have a routine, and they'll be like, okay, this is a movement I can do. And then start again every time you want, because It's never going to end. Self-care is something that, you know, maybe I'm sleeping better now, but then I'm not eating well. Then I need to look at eating. Oh, I'm sleeping well, I'm eating well, and then I do no exercise. Okay, so let's start a new self-care canvas for exercise, for eating, you know, for everything that you're making yourself aware of your own life. So this is the invitation we try to bring to people when we talk about them. And it is something that me and Fernanda, we always have done, not in such a systematic way, but because of everything we told you about our family and the courses we did, we will be, you know, that's our approach of health. And then now we have this tool that people can download from the website. So if they want to, they just can go to the website and download the self-care canvas in English or Spanish or Portuguese. Those are the languages so far we have the self-care canvas. And they start to build their self-care program, routine, you know, ideas. So.
Yeah, no, that's great that you mentioned that. And I'll put a link to your website in the show notes where people can access that. And a self-care canvas is basically a tool on which to set out an issue that you want to address and how you want to address it. Is that right?
The idea of having a canvas is because sometimes we have a lot of paper and we write it down, a lot of ideas and take notes about a lot of things in our lives. But usually we don't do this about our own health, our own plan of living well. And imagine if we do, we could be greater in planning and organizing our lives and having a better life, better health. Because if we are going okay, just making it by heart, imagine if we were planning this in a proper way.
Yeah. And you mentioned the FEMA method. I don't know that you spelled it out, Mariana, but you mentioned your method. Embracing movement and again, right? So, and the thing that I really appreciate about that method is, I mean, the whole idea of having a method is always helpful, but the embracing part, that felt like a really interesting thing, because often when we have an illness, we, like you said, we get angry. We don't want it to be like that, right? We don't want to have the issue. We don't want to have to deal with our weight or our injury or our mental health struggles. So can you talk a bit about the importance of embracing?
Yes, sure. The embracing idea is connected with the perspective of integrality. Because how can I deal with something I insist to exclude from myself? And so if I can make this turning and consider this is part of my own life, my own conditions and needs, it's going to have a different perspective. It's not something I want to avoid. It's something I want to comprehend, to include, to manage with the other perspectives of my own life.
And this concept is very particular because in Portuguese, it's really easy to understand, because people would be like embracing, okay, so when a child is crying, you take care of the child, and then you put the baby in your, you know, in yourself, and then you say it's okay. So this word in Portuguese, it really means this. And when we talk about health and doing this, sometimes in English, it was really hard to find the concept. We struggled a little bit, and it was very interesting because I was in Canada at the time, and then talking to people and trying to see if that was the best word we could use. And we decided to use the embracement. And in Brazil, we even have a national policy for embracement, for humanizing health. So this would be the basis of humanizing healthcare. And then the value of embracement is to be able to look at people's eyes and then take care of them. And how we can do that to ourselves. And we know that self-compassion, for example, it's a word that in English is very common and we can look at it. And it's so hard to do, right? Self-compassion. You know, sometimes it's easier to have compassion for others than for ourselves. So all of these words help us to understand embracement, you know, empathy, compassion, self-empathy, self-compassion. They invite us to look at ourselves with more caring, with more love. And then this step that is embracement, sometimes they will ask for us too much. They will ask for us to have cosmetics, you know, because you know why you're having this problem with this person now, but you know something's going on and we need to be open to what's happening and what we can learn from that. Or also it demands from us forgiveness. And it's so hard to forgive others and to forgive ourselves. So, but we know that forgiveness has makes a big difference in our brain and the way we behave. So it's really important to invest in forgiveness. And everything that is related to that, it should happen in this step, that is the embracement step before the movement. Because if you don't look deep down into what it can mean, what it can invite you to realize, because you're having this, you know, problem that you're, you know, or this desire that you're having, then the movement kind of can be a little bit superficial. It will be like, you know, the first layer, but not the entire complete comprehension of the problem. And then the real movement that you need to do. So this is the tough part for everybody. We know what we want to change or what we want to, you know, achieve. We want to move, but then to look down and deep and everything that is necessary, then it's tough. So this is something very interesting for us. And it's everything to do with the conscienceological paradigm and with the everything that we connected to achieve this step. So, yeah. So don't give up. Just, you know, invest on this step. It's very important.
Yeah, and talking about conscienceological paradigm and just staying with the multidimensional perspective, right, I was keen, you talk about genetics. We all know that genetics plays a big role in our proneness to disease. I guess it's also epigenetics, right? Like certain people might carry a gene, but it's not activated. And but then in conscienceology, we have the idea of paragenetics as well. So talk a bit about how you see these. Maybe you could explain paragenetics as well, and then how that relates to the health process.
Of course. The paragenetics is the all your structure, your body, that you inherit from yourself, from other lives, other bodies. For example, we have a patient that have a different sensitivity in one leg. It's always like cool or not feeling properly. And when we investigate with the person, we considered the hypothesis that the past life, his death was having this leg cutted out. And he had a really hemorrhagic problem in that life. And this could be the reason. This body has this different sensitivity. And when we went to our a computerist to check this idea, the computerist said, I think I'm beginning to understand what's going on here. Did you have some accident, important accident in this leg? She didn't know anything about that, but she got it. Well, there is a problem about your blood in this part of your body. And then we began to treat it, And now it's almost 100% solved.
So sometimes the physical body was manifesting as if it had had a trauma, when in this life it had not had a trauma. So the idea is that the trauma has carried through from the past life.
From the past life to this one. And sometimes people have some trait expressions of health that are not common in their own family. Oh, nobody has this. Why does this person have it? Sometimes they are taller or even stronger or even more resistant, have a better immunity. This happens for good too, because they have a structure of body that are more evolved than their own genetics. So the paragenetics works for both, for all the sides. Sometimes the scars you bring with you, sometimes the abilities you have that are incorporated in your body, and people can bring it in this life.
Have anything to add, Mariana?
Yes, when we see these cases, we usually think like, that's so weird, that's so different. But the big invitation here is to consider this possibility. And when we think about the concept of paragenetics, exactly this is the meaning. Okay, so when I think beyond, oh, if I cannot eat certain types of food, or if I have a pain in some area of my body, or if I have a disease that, you know, it's just the first in the family to have it, or something really good, as Fernando was saying, it's not always for the bad, you know, your own inheritance history. And for example, how can I take care of myself this life so I do not go through my other life taking stuff that I don't want to? You know, because we know cases of people in our groups that they do see like no babies with some stuff and everything that you think about. Okay, how was their past life? So how can we, you know, take care of our body this life so the next life can benefit from it? So this is always an invitation to, you know, self-care too. Paragenesis is an invitation for that.
And are you like... your book has a lot of referenced studies and you know, relies a lot on solid studies. But I guess as far as paragenetics goes, is that a space? I doubt anybody else would have studied it, but is that something that you've thought about designing studies in, maybe to research that as a larger population?
Not really. I do work a lot with Ethicolab, that we do lots of research on the health and then how your ectoplasm influences the health and the para surgery, right? Is that okay?
Yeah, para surgery.
And I do research a lot about long-distance healing, and now I'm currently doing a systematic review about bioresonance studies and approaches to health, how you can, you know, better do diagnosis with bioresonance methods. And maybe it is a possibility in the future to do studies in this area, especially not only paragenetics, but the paracerebral that we have,
parabrain, yeah.
And the parabrain, and this would be, you know, really at the edge of the studies so far. But, you know, people listening to us can expect more material, more books. Me and Fernanda are already talking about it, and publications already that are in the oven related to this material. So probably we'll bring some new stuff as we are doing research and following this path of self-care and the best way to take care of themselves and ourselves.
Yeah, that's great that you're distant healing. I know Charles Tart in his book, The End of Materialism, classifies distant healing as one of the big five areas that have been essentially established through a lot of studies, right? So there seems to be a lot of work that sounds like you're part of that sort of work. And just for listeners to clarify, Ectolab is a group at Iguazu Falls, is it, or where are they meet? Yeah, at the campers,
They do.
who work especially with energy healing using what's called ectoplasm as a sort of a dense form of energy. And I actually just had I actually you so you can book yourself online, right, to receive a treatment from Ectolab, and I just did that a couple of weeks ago because I had dental pain, and it was very interesting. It was it was an interesting experience to notice some energetic activity around that area of my face during the time slot, and a relief of the symptoms.
Oh, good. I'm glad to know. And if people want to read more about it, they can go to Ectolab, a website and papers that we have produced. They have this parasurgery dynamic in many cities in Brazil: São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, Foz, Iguaçu Falls, Florianópolis. So they have grown and the numbers. And so far, they treated over 50,000 patients in their parasurgery dynamics over the last 10 years. So, and many groups, the Consensual and Healing Initiative, with Professor Shamini Jain, she just published a checklist to better do clinical trials related to distant healing and bioresonance practices. And people can see many publications related to this area now so far. But this is really something to look into.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to, and this is, I guess, going into a space that is perhaps more conventional, even though people still, some people might don't not think acupuncture is conventional. But something that jumped out at me again in your book was a statement that acupuncture and diazepam are equally effective in treating pain and osteoarthritis. You're talking about pain there in one of the sections of your book. And because obviously, as you say, there's a large number, somewhere between 30 and 50% of people across the world live with chronic pain. So, and we know in America at least, it's a big topic that an addiction to painkillers, or just people talk about the epidemic of painkiller addiction, essentially, where people take painkillers all their life. So that is based on studies, right, that you're citing there, the effectiveness of acupuncture.
Yes, absolutely. Many questions that are related to complementary therapies are regarding evidence. Do they really work? So what happened is that in 2019, we started a project here in Brazil where we start mapping all the evidence for several complementary therapies. And then we included acupuncture, auricular therapy, many practices from traditional Chinese medicine, yoga, meditation, and the list go on. We have over 25 evidence maps produced so far and available in English, Portuguese, and Spanish in the virtual health library for traditional complementary integrative medicine. And what we did was because the Pan American organization asked us to do an evidence map of complementary therapies regarding pain, chronic pain. And we did this study and we identified 11 complementary therapies that are with lots of evidence, with high-level quality studies of very good systematic reviews presenting these results of treating chronic pain with complementary therapies. And because of this evidence map, we started to talk with for example, the City of São Paulo Health Secretariat. So we could include these health practices, these complementary therapies for treating people with chronic pain in the city of São Paulo. So we go not only treating pain with painkillers, but treating pain in an integral approach. You know, asking people, inviting people to understand why this pain happens, when it happens. Okay, let's try acupuncture together with physical therapy, together with yoga and meditation. And we need to ask people, do you get enough money to live? Do you need some, help from the government so you can pay your bills and, pay for food? So when you do this integral approach, you're really treating chronic pain. because it's a very complex problem, healthcare problem, public healthcare problem that we need to look really deep and understand all the several aspects that we need to take care of. And not only to, you know, say, oh, you know what, this is because you're, you know, you need just medication for that. And then you see everything that's happening in the US. So you know that you need to do a community public health approach to treating pain. And then pain has this benefit of, you know, of looking at people, because you cannot do lots of things when you're in pain. So you need to stop and you need to do something related to that. And so because of this evidence mapping, we identified many herbs and medicinal plants that people could use and all these complementary therapies. And we even included the self-care canvas that we present in the book in this guideline for people to take care of themselves. So this was very interesting to see this approach. And I hope more people can include more different therapies to their self-care practices related to chronic pain. So, yeah, Fernanda, she followed all this process. So, and this was the example we chose for the book, yeah.
And as a occupational physician, we can conceive also the way we work and we teach people from the younghood to behave, because we teach people to silence their own bodies, to silence what they feel, the discomforts, the problems, the little pains, but they got bigger. Sometimes the people are so effective in silencing their own bodies that when a problem come up, it's really intense. It's already a big one. And we can consider that this change in the pain perspective and pain approach needs to consider our way of being productive, of our way of making so much so for so long and not resting, not sleeping, not connecting. And pains make that. Pains reboot your body to connect. You cannot silence it anymore. Now you're going to listen. And then now you're going to have to make changes. Maybe you keep silent for 30, 20 years. It's really not an easy process. And getting a pill is easier. But people know it doesn't work. They get addicted and keep feeling pain. So we must change in a very broader way. But as we don't change all we need in one moment, we change in our lives for ourselves. This is what we can do.
Yeah. Yeah, that and normalizing making life changes is a big thing, right? Make it to because as you say, often we just want the pain to go, we just want to take the cure without looking at that, and there is resistance to changing our life in a bigger way, because it's also not normal. People might comment on this, why are you not eating this anymore, why are you not drinking anymore, why are you whatever the things are, right, that we're changing. So I think that's something you advocate for as well in a way in your book, right, is to normalize making positive changes in our life. Yeah. Look, thank you very much. We're going to wrap it up. I thought before we go, I'd just like to check in or just ask you, you know, what are there any key messages or suggestions that you would give to a person who would like to make some changes in their self-care, to take more action to their self-care after listening to this?
Yeah, yes. I think so. Maybe I think don't think when you are sick, don't think it's a problem. Be curious about that. try to look further. Try to consider maybe something is changing for good. Look for the good things you can take from it. This is my desire.
And for me, it would be to invite people to go to our website and take a look at the materials and maybe read a little bit more about self-care. And we have some videos that people can watch of us talking about the method and the canvas. Download the self-care canvas. You know, we also have another tool in English in our website that is the self-care timeline for healthcare and disease. So you can think about this process in your own life, not only in the moment that you are, but okay, when I was a young person or teenager, or when I'm in my 30s and now I'm in my 60s, how was I behaving towards my health and my care and the diseases I have, because I can understand better as a process, you know, not only this moment now, but in this process. And I will also invite people to connect. It's very important not to be alone and feeling alone in this process. Everybody is struggling. We have something that we want to, you know, work on and be better, because we want to, you know, have these connections with people. And so listen to people, to other people's stories, and connect with them. That would be something very helpful. And if you have time, you can always join us in the Bridge Club, because we were discussing the book.
I was going to say that if anybody's listening to this in the first half of the year 2024, you can join us in the book club, where you can actually interact with Fernanda and Mariana and ask them any questions. You know, just study the book with us. It's free. It's just an activity that we do to for people to connect, to discuss and debate themes that we find interesting and that help us understand ourselves better and live a better life. So there'll be a link to how to join us in the book club in the show notes as well. This might be a big thing on which to end, but just when you were talking, Fernanda, it made me think about like embracing, you know, and being curious about the disease. What if it's a terminal disease, right? And that's where we I guess have one of the big paradigms of the biomedical framework is that death is the worst thing that can happen to us. That has to be stopped at all cost, in a sense, right? And whereas from the multidimensional point of view, death is part of a life. It's a continuity of life. So I just thought of that when you said that. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, that's not the failure of the process. Sometimes it's just a new beginning. Sometimes we plan this way. It's okay too.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me. And I highly recommend people who are interested in taking control of their well-being to check out your book, Self-Care, A Dynamic Approach to Integral Health, available on Amazon in English, Portuguese, Spanish?
Soon to be in Spanish.
Okay. Awesome.
If you are still here, I assume you value this topic, and so I encourage you once again to join us at the book club to interact with Fernanda and Mariana directly. Alternatively, you will be able to find the recordings of our book club meetings on YouTube by looking for the Bridge Book Club. You can find out more about me and my work on my website, multidimensionalevolution.com, where you can also find contact details. Thanks for listening, and until next time.